When does the line blur between sightseeing and instruction? The Crooks are developing UAVs too. And Virgin Galactic fills in its executive ranks. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. The FAA appears to be cracking down on the use of light sport aircraft for what it calls commercial air tours and what some operators creatively call introductory flight lessons. The Associated Press reports a stricter surveillance plan was announced Friday in the wake of several recent accidents. FAA Western Pacific Flight Standards Manager Nick Reyes told the Honolulu Star-Advertiser that some trike operators, quote, are trying to get around the air tour provision by offering scenic flights under the guise of introductory flying instruction, unquote. Reyes promises more ramp checks and what were termed interviews with pilots to back up a recent meeting with weight shift control operators to encourage more voluntary compliance. Operators have been warned that ads which appear to offer air tours will trigger enforcement action ranging from warnings to revocation of certificates, and that includes ads on the internet. Five businesses in the state appear to be targeted. There have been five crashes of trikes in Hawaii in the last 18 months, two of them fatals involving passengers on what the FAA charges were commercial tour flights. Investigations are ongoing. Since experimentals and SLSAs cannot legally be used to carry persons or property for compensation or hire in the U.S., there's no legal way to simply sell someone a ride in one. But a flight instructor can use an SLSA or an experimental with a letter of deviation authority to provide dual training for compensation. So, if you think you're interested in flying a weight shift aircraft or gyroplane and don't have a friend who will take you up free, the only way to get that first flight is to buy an hour of actual flight instruction. That's understood by visitors to fly-ins catering to enthusiasts, but many tourists in Hawaii have no such long-term interest in the sport, and they may also not be equipped to know the risks. They just want to go sightseeing in something more bird-like than an A-Star helicopter or an air van. Weight shift flight schools will have to be more careful in their advertising presentations from now on, but the nodding and winking are likely to continue. The law enforcement world has been anxiously awaiting clearance from the FAA to operate small unmanned helicopters in densely populated areas to help out with tasks as diverse as support for the SWAT team and routine measurements at auto accident scenes. The machines the police want to fly cost anywhere from a few thousand to over $100,000, and manufacturers are lined up in wait to provide them once the FAA drops that green flag. But on the other side of the law are miscreants who probably won't feel the need to even seek regulatory approval, let alone wait for it. MIT's Technology Review reports researchers at the Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey have demonstrated a drone built on remote-controlled toy quadricopters, which can buzz through neighborhoods looking for Wi-Fi networks with poor security. The goal would be to automatically infect computers on those networks with software to create a botnet, or a group of computers which can be remotely controlled for nefarious purposes, including distributed denial-of-service attacks on websites. Unlike law enforcement drones, these are based on a $400 UAV and require as little as another $200 to finish. They're remote-controlled using 3G cards and can fly for a few minutes on a charge. But Sven Dietrich, an assistant professor in computer science at the Stevens Institute of Technology, who led the development of one of the drones, also notes, quote, "Our drone can land close to the target and sit there, and if it has solar power, it can recharge and continue to attack all the networks around it," unquote. There is also technology available off the shelf which could allow a small UAV to actually follow you as you drive home by tracking your mobile phone, then sit on your roof and look for wireless security vulnerabilities. Such capabilities would be a boon for those who would attack your computer. Home wireless networks generally have relatively primitive security measures compared to your internet service provider, and by coming in through that back door in your own network, the source of an attack could be much harder to trace. As creepy as this development sounds, there's also cause for optimism. As might be imagined, as soon as the presentations became public, network-savvy readers began comparing notes on possible ways to jam or confuse the remote control signals. But it's not safe to assume you're safe. Tom Kellerman, Chief Technology Officer of the wireless security firm Air Patrol, tells MIT's Technology Review it's time for companies to lock down their wireless access points. Quote, If you're a Fortune 1000, you should be concerned, because competitive intelligence has evolved. It has taken on a whole new arsenal of capabilities due to cyber and wireless, unquote. Former NASA, White House, and Department of Energy official Stephen J. Isaacowitz has been named as Executive VP and Chief Technology Officer for Virgin Galactic, tasked to lead technical oversight of key programs, development and management of new programs, government and industry business development, government affairs, advanced technologies, and strategic analysis. Isaacowitz has previously served in several senior positions at NASA, including the role of Deputy Associate Administrator for the Exploration Systems Mission Directorate. He's the author of the well-known International Reference Guide to Space Launch Systems and earned bachelor's and master's degrees in aerospace engineering from MIT. Most recently, Isaacowitz served as Chief Financial Officer for the U.S. Department of Energy through two presidential administrations, where he was responsible for determining priorities and identifying high-payoff technologies in the department's $26 billion annual budget. Virgin Galactic CEO and President George Whitesides commented, quote, "Steve brings extensive experience in the areas of aerospace engineering, management, and business strategy, and will be a strong asset," unquote. Isaacowitz called his appointment a deep honor and privilege, quote, "I'm looking forward to drawing on the aerospace sector experience to help make Virgin Galactic a breakthrough company as it opens up the commercial space frontier," unquote. Up next on ANN, APA had special reason to remember 9/11. The costs of airline security aren't always obvious. And does a history of mental illness make you a security threat? You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, September 13th. I'm Paul Plack. As part of participation in 9/11 memorial observances on Sunday, the Allied Pilots Association's national officers affirmed APA's commitment to never forget the fellow American Airlines flight crew members and many others who perished in the terrorist attacks on the U.S. 10 years ago. APA President Captain Dave Bates was present for ceremonies at Ground Zero in New York and commented, quote, "It's extremely moving to see firsthand how this location has been transformed from a scene of mass destruction to one of remembrance and reverence. As efforts like this memorial site and today's ceremony illustrate, we absolutely will never forget," unquote. APA Vice President Secretary Treasurer First Officer Tony Chapman was at the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, and APA Secretary-Treasurer First Officer Scott Shankland spoke at the 9/11 Flight Crew Memorial in Grapevine, Texas. Other APA officials and members at large also participated in additional observances across the country, including memorial services at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., the Massachusetts State House, the Garden of Reflection in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, the Flight 93 Memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and at numerous collegiate and professional sporting events throughout the weekend. As the 9/11 anniversary was approaching last week, the Wall Street Journal's Scott McCartney set out to calculate the costs of transportation security. Some of those costs are vague and hard to nail down, but some are clear. In the end, we're spending tens of billions of dollars as a society and still have gaps in our efforts to keep terrorists out of our lives. Airline passengers pay $2.50 per flight leg, or up to $10 per round trip, but the losses suffered by the airline industry due to passengers opting to skip flying to avoid being groped or scanned is harder to determine. Screening of air freight has added 5 to 8 cents per pound, or about 5%, to shipping costs, although that's significantly less than the 45 cents per pound in fuel surcharges that were passed on to customers when oil hit $100 a barrel. One predicted calamity brought on by the screening of cargo, delays of 24 to 36 hours in getting it shipped, have never materialized. The bad news? That's due at least in part to the fact that the recession has overall shipping volume still well below 2008 levels. so the system has never been tested really at full capacity. The Transportation Security Administration spends $8 billion of our money every year on its army of 52,000 screeners, but the productivity and time lost by travelers delayed by screeners is a lot harder to nail down. TSA is finally starting to experiment with a trusted traveler program, which would better focus screening efforts on higher-risk passengers, and that could help control the growth in costs to taxpayers in the future. It's obvious that if you've had an encounter with police in your home country, you might expect some difficulty in getting cleared to board a flight to the U.S. But what if that encounter was over a suicide attempt years in the past, or some other symptom of mental illness which was not a threat to anyone but yourself? CBC News in Canada reports there are at least a dozen or more such cases, according to Stanley Stylianos, program manager at Canada's Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office. He adds that his office has received many more calls from Canadians who haven't yet experienced such problems with U.S. customs, but are worried they might when visiting south of the border. One case on record is that of 65-year-old Lois Kamnitz of Toronto, who took an overdose of pills in an attempt to end her life back in 2006. Police were called, Lois was saved, and she says she's made the efforts over the last 4 years to recover from anxiety and depression. In any event, she notes, suicide is not a criminal offense. But when she tried to board a flight to the U.S. from Toronto, she faced a four-day delay and a $250 charge to get a note from a doctor approved by U.S. Homeland Security before she was allowed to make the trip, and all because she had had contact with police. DHS spokesman Brad Benson says now that she has the note, she shouldn't have any further problems traveling to the U.S. But CBC News notes that 9.6 million other Canadians have similar records on file with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which means U.S. bureaus now have direct reciprocal access to those records. Lois Kamnitz says the government is, quote, obviously not considering what the impact of that can be and how much that can alter a person's life, unquote. An 80-year-old man from Taber, Iowa, was injured last Wednesday when he was struck by the tail rotor of a helicopter. Authorities say they're not sure if Robert Smith walked into the rotor or tripped and fell. The pilot, Larry Inman, a friend of Smith's son, Brett, had just landed the small helicopter on the Smith property, according to the Omaha World-Herald. He said he was sitting in the cockpit talking to Brett when the older Smith walked behind the aircraft. Fremont County Sheriff Kevin Eistrop said they felt the thump of the blade hitting him and saw what happened. Smith was transported by medical helicopter to Creighton University Medical Center. He was then transferred to Nebraska Medical Center, where he was listed in critical condition. And finally today, what's it worth to have access to a municipal airport runway for tenants of your private hangar? There appears to be a considerable difference of opinion on that question between a private hangar business called the Tail Dragger Inn and the landlord, the town council that administers the Hamilton Airport in New Jersey. A dramatic escalation in the gate fee has the hangar owner balking, so on September 3rd, the town blocked his runway access with a parked tractor. The Press of Atlantic City reports the tenants say the city charged $100 a month for runway access, going back to at least 1992, but is now suddenly demanding $1,000 a month. The city also got the FAA to close the aerobatic practice box over the airport on August 22nd, following a mid-air collision which produced one fatality. Airport officials tell the press the pilots who use the aerobatic box have become a liability as the facility grows and tries to attract commercial flights. Joseph Flood, who operates an airplane restoration shop housed in the Tail Dragger Inn, is puzzled by that claim, noting the number of aircraft based at the airport has dropped from 50 to 14 over the past decade. Barry Straga, who owns the private hangar, says he's confident the problems can be ironed out in the next week. Flood certainly hopes so. He says of the blockage by the tractor, quote, I'm out of business. How can I operate if I can't get airplanes in and out? Unquote. I looked it up. The Hamilton Airport has a runway about 3,600 feet long. Good luck with that commercial service. That's the latest from Aero News. Don't forget to subscribe to our Aerocasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.